It's a feeling of being consistently squeezed downward.
Can you afford to live in LA? Can anyone?
There's nothing. It's worse now than it's ever been.
It's the high cost of buying or renting a place to call home. This is KNX Spotlight, American Dream, LA Nightmare. Taking your calls and tweets. Here now, Tom Huell.
Good morning and thanks for joining us. I'm here with KNX investigative reporter Charles Feldman and a panel of experts who will be answering all of your questions about the unaffordable cost of housing here in Southern California. We'll take a look at just how bad things have gotten, where they're going from here, and spoiler alert, it's nowhere good. Get some tips on how to find an apartment or a house you can actually afford. And we'll be taking your calls at 866-569-1070.
And as always, we'll be taking your tweets using the hashtag KNX Spotlight. And by the way, coming up about 7 minutes from now, we will be on Periscope and you will be able to check out all the behind the scenes activity live. Just look for KNX Spotlight Housing. Can you afford to live in LA?
But first, it's harder than ever to find a home in any budget in Southern California, and LA's rental market is the worst in the nation. Let's get more now from KNX 1070's Chris Seedens.
You have people that can just shell out $3,000 a month for rent. That's part of my salary that's going to absolutely nothing.
It's just ridiculous. I make a good living. I don't have any money left at the end of the month.
Los Angeles and Orange County are the least affordable housing markets in the country, according to data gathered by the real estate website Zillow.com.
We really are an awfully expensive place to live.
Richard Green, director of the USC Lusk Center for Real Estate, says the rental market is the worst we've ever seen.
Even though there are places with higher rents than Southern California, our incomes are lower than those places.
And the disparity between housing prices and income is posing a major challenge for businesses trying to attract the best people to Southern California. And it's only going to get worse.
I would argue it's probably one of the most significant business challenges we as a state face.
Christopher Thornburg is a founding partner of Beacon Economics.
Businesses, of course, want to attract the best talent, and that means they have to compensate people more, or they can't get the people to come at all. It's an enormous issue in terms of the lifestyle that people just can't afford to have here.
We have more extreme commutes than any other city in the United States.
And when it comes to that commute, Dana Cuff, director of City Lab at UCLA, says Southern California's sprawl has hit the wall.
We've already expanded out as far as we possibly can before people can't commute to jobs with enough time to get back home during the day.
To put the problem in perspective, a study by the California Housing Partnership shows a person needs to earn more than $68,000 a year to afford an average apartment in Los Angeles County. That's nearly $20,000 more than the median income in the city of Los Angeles. For KNX Spotlight, Chris Seedens, KNX 1070 News Radio.
We'll spend the next hour talking about the American dream, the LA nightmare. We'll introduce our experts and take your questions right after we bring you up to date on Southland traffic. And here, this is KNX 1070 News Radio Spotlight Mayor, taking your calls at 866-569-1070.
And your tweets at hashtag KNX Spotlight.
Want to direct my first question to Kevin Miller. He is joining us. He is the president of Westside Rentals. We're also joined by Holly Benson, the vice president of housing development for Abode Communities. And Skylar Olson, a senior economist with Zillow.com, is joining our panel as well. A little bit later, we'll be talking with Beth Stein, the regional vice president of Coldwell Banker Residential Mortgage. So, Kevin, you heard Chris's report there and the people talking about how really impossible it is to afford a one, a two-bedroom apartment for a family to live. How bad is it out there?
It's not that bad.
Disclaimer here, you do rent properties. You help people find apartments. So,
yes.
So how do you help them deal with this kind of situation?
I mean, it's still reality. They have to deal with it. You know, people need a place to live, and the prices are what they are. There's a lot of different options out there. It doesn't mean you have to always go for the most expensive, or in certain neighborhoods you can afford, you might not be able to afford. So you got to find out what's best for you and your family and your situation. But listen, so many people are renting. So many people are figuring out a way to get it done. And it's going on every day.
Well, Holly Benson, let's play the money game and figure out just how costly it's going to be. So I arrive in Los Angeles from who knows where. I see the sign, welcome to L.A. I want to get myself an apartment. I have a new job. It's paying me $50,000 a year. I want to have a really nice place to live in the city of L.A. Can I do it? Yes or no?
Not very easily. Sorry.
$60,000 a year. Can I do it? Yes or no?
Keep going up.
$70,000.
Keep going.
$80,000.
Keep going.
$90,000.
You're about there now.
$100,000.
For a family of two, yeah.
$100,000.
You have choices at that income level. But if you are at the median income level, which median is half of all Angelenos or below, then you don't have those options. And it is really, really difficult for people. And, you know, when you break down who's at median income, it's really in the lower income levels, working families, where there are really no options for folks.
Kevin, that sounds bleak. Come on, Holly, it sounds bleak.
We don't want to paint you as the bad guy.
No, right. But you have to admit, $100,000 to get a decent apartment in L.A., not many people in L.A. make $100,000 a year.
No, but there's other ways. You know, there's roommate situations, there's living in areas that may be a little farther commute than you'd like. It's out there. It's going on. I mean, obviously, like you just said, not many people are making that kind of money, but yet everyone's living somewhere.
Now,
so,
you know. West Side Rentals, you don't actually own the buildings. You work for the owners and find tenants who will live in the buildings that are owned by people. We do have an anonymous question via Facebook. A woman says that basically she and everybody in her building, they were evicted. She went to find another apartment and found that most of the apartment buildings are all owned by the same family or the same group of people. And they are generally parking their money here from overseas in real estate. And as a result, they are able to essentially control the market. So you deal with a whole bunch of different owners, a whole bunch of different buildings. What are you finding in terms of the ownership squeeze?
Yeah, I mean, owners, it's a small community. And, you know, usually when you start buying buildings at a young age and you keep accumulating them, then you end up owning a bunch of buildings. And you get select families that do that. And that's, you know, definitely part of it. But still, I mean, you know, the prices and the market are still dictated by what's going on. So even if you own a bunch of spots, you don't own every building. So there's still many different options.
I guess the question is just how free is the free market out there?
It's free. It's free. It's there's so many buildings in L.A. and there's so many places to live that it's going to take so much for someone to have a complete monopoly and control on it.
In just a couple of minutes, we're going to raise the question and try to answer it. How did L.A. get into the predicament it is in now in terms of the cost of housing? But also, before we take a break, in about another minute or so, if you happen to have the Periscope app on your phone, feel free to look for KNX Spotlight Housing. Can you afford to live in L.A.? And you can watch a little bit behind the scenes and a little bit in front of the scenes.
And coming up, of course, for this half hour, we're talking about rentals. In the next half hour, we'll talk about purchasing, what it takes to purchase a home. And it's not necessarily as tough as it used to be, but it's not as easy as many people would like. We'll be getting into that throughout the course of the hour here on KNX 1070. Spotlight, American Dream, L.A. Nightmare. And did you mention the Periscope?
I certainly did.
I was busy thinking of something else while you were talking.
And the Periscope is almost off.
Okay, yeah. they're bringing it up to Periscope depth.
Absolutely.
At this point. We should be up very shortly, and our conversation will continue. This is KNX 1070 Spotlight, American Dream, L.A. Nightmare. I'm Tom Huell, and we're taking your affordable housing calls at 866-569-1070.
And I'm Charles Feldman. We're taking your tweets at hashtag KNX Spotlight. If you happen to be on Periscope, you can actually watch us now, too. I want to bring in Skylar Olson, who's up in Seattle. And Skylar, you're the senior economist with the real estate data site Zillow.com. When I moved to L.A. about 20 years ago from New York, I remember walking around thinking, this place is cheap. The apartments were 2-3 times the size of what I could buy in Manhattan. The prices were, it seemed to me, about maybe even a third the cost. 20 years later, this is not the case. What happened?
You know, over the past couple of decades, rents have been outpacing incomes. If you look in the shorter term, you know, in the recent past, rents have accelerated, right? They're just growing faster because more rental demand is building, right? Whether it's because of foreclosed homeowners that lost their homes and now they're renters, a huge growing population of young adults who are particularly attracted to metros like LA are renting for longer, delaying marriage and baby. And so they're renting. And just put that on top of the fact that inventory in the for sale market is really low. you know, again, you're a renter if you can't find a place to buy. So there's a lot of pressure in that market, really pushing up rents in L.A.
You know, there have also been some claims that L.A. has basically zoned itself into the situation where it is, that denser housing cannot be built in so many places where single-family homes currently exist, that there is simply no more room to build housing.
Yeah, and that's a big issue, right? And one that's a real tough nut to crack, right? You can understand, you know, homeowners that live in low dense areas and SFR or single family home neighborhoods, you know, they want to protect the character of their neighborhood. But, you know, LA is an area that attracts a lot of people. And a lot of people move to that space. And as more and more people flood in, you do need to respond by adding more supply. And it's hard to do that. And it's particularly hard to do that when you're zoned for low density, right? And as, you know, LA, you know, has just kind of spread and spread and spread and become a giant empire, right? Covering a lot of space, trying to add more housing.
Skylar, you're an economist. If people will pay it, landlords will keep charging it, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, that's how markets work, right? You compete against other renters for a limited amount of inventory in an area. And so, you know, depending on who you are, you got to employ other strategies, whether you're doubling up, adding roommates, living farther out and accepting the cost of, you know, a huge commute, you know, and the cost in time and gas and stress.
Well, Kevin, you're the rental guy here. Here's a tweet we have. Somebody says that she's paid over $30,000 in rent last year in Los Angeles for one bedroom. Obviously, she's indicating that it's a strain on her economically. She can't afford a house. What's the answer to somebody like that? Better rent control, rent stabilization? Is that where we need to go back to?
No. Maybe she should look for a place that she can't afford. I mean, she's at, you know, $30,000 is $2,500 a month. Maybe, she, you know, it'd be smarter move down to a $1,500, $1,800 a month place. It might not be her ideal choice, but still, you got to live. And if it's too much for her, then why go through that? Why have the stress and why be under each month and worrying about that? But maybe you have another, like Skylar was talking about, maybe you just add another 10 or 15 minutes to your commute and find something you can't afford.
Joe from Culver City is joining us, and I think he has a similar point to make. So, Joe, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. Well, you know, I kind of agreeing with Kevin there. That, you know, I own a small landscaping company and I have employees and you know, they don't make, you know, $50,000 or $60,000 or $80,000 a year. But these guys, you know, they live in the Los Angeles greater area, not in the West Side. So each individual has, you know, their job and they find, you know, their rentals where they can afford. Now, they're not going to come in to the West Side where the rents are $2,500, $3,000, $3,500 because they can't afford it. They would probably want to live on this side of town to make it easier to get to their jobs, but they can't afford it. But with that said, it is becoming unaffordable to live in the West Side unless these new people that are coming in from I've been seeing the place. If you look around as you're driving around, and us as landscapers, we're seeing places from Nebraska, Omaha, from all over the Midwest, Texas, and they're all coming here. And these people are probably trying to find jobs that are trying to pay them $70,000-$80,000 so they can live in the West Side. But realistically, they're not going to get those jobs. They're going to get average jobs that are probably paying a little under $50,000.
Okay.
And they're not going to be able to afford to live in the West Side.
Right. Well, very few people can afford to live in the West Side. And there is a strata. There's an economic strata here. And I think, Kevin, you were saying find a place that fits your economic reality.
Yeah,
right?
Find a place that fits your budget. I mean, and listen, every major city has areas that are more expensive than others.
And Kevin, when we come back from the break, there's someone on Twitter who has a bone to pick with you.
Okay. I'm sure he's quite ready.
So brace for it.
Very quickly before we do go, Holly, do people have the wrong expectations when they go out looking for an apartment? In other words, you take a look at how much money you have and you have to take a look at where you can afford to be instead of where you want to be?
So, you know, I can't speak to what people's expectations are, but I think the previous comments about certain areas of LA not being affordable, but implying that others are, is just unfortunately not true for half of Angelenos in the county of LA. It's just, even when you look out to those farther afield places, it is unaffordable when you consider what people's incomes are.
So basically, incomes just haven't kept pace with the rising cost of housing. That's the soup that we're in, and we're going to try to figure out how to get out of this as our conversation continues. This is KNX 1070 Spotlight, American Dream, L.A. Nightmare. Taking your calls at 866-569-1070. I'm Tom Huell.
And I'm Charles Feldman. We're taking your tweets at hashtag KNX Spotlight. And here's a tweet for you, Kevin. Someone who's not happy with what you said. She says, this is the best advice Westside Rentals can offer for this crisis. Get a roommate or move out of L.A.?
I didn't say move out of L.A.
Okay.
I didn't say get a roommate if you don't have to. I said find a place that you can afford. That's for anybody. And it goes across the board. There are plenty of places out there. We have incredible deals on our site every single day. I see them. I'm on the front lines with it. They're there. Most people don't want to have a longer commute. Most people want to have a nicer place than they can afford. Most people want to live in an area that they can walk to certain things. Well, guess what? With your income and your situation, you might not be able to do those things.
Okay, we have a counterpoint now from Downey. I believe Dulia is the name that I'm seeing. Dulia, do I have your name right?
Yes, that's correct.
Please go ahead with your idea.
Okay, what I was saying is I grew up in Watts. Right now, I understand that right now, a three-bedroom house, if you rent in Watts, $900. I got married. I had kids. I didn't want my kids to grow up in Watts because of the school district. I went to Jordan High. I would fight all the time. I moved to Southgate. The rent went up. I moved to Downey. A three-bedroom house is $2,700. It's a good school district. The kids have better options. And you go to school, you get educated, you get a good income, you get two jobs, and you still cannot make it. So I believe that there's something that we can do as a community. We should pressure with something because people make those sacrifices and pay the high rent because of their kids. They have families. You always want your kids to have better stuff than you did.
Right. And so Dulia's point here is that, yeah, people sometimes do live beyond their means because they're trying to get their kids a good education and trying to keep their kids alive in some cases. So what about that? Let's go to you, Holly.
Sure. So, I think that's true. There are probably some areas where there are very poor housing options that are quote unquote affordable, but it requires overcrowding. 7 of the 10 top zip codes in the nation are in LA that are overcrowded. And then there's the CHPC report that was referenced in your opening bit cites that there's a shortfall of nearly 500,000 units for people at the very low and below income levels. And these are working people. Nearly a million people in LA County are at 50% and below the median income. So this is not about just people making different choices of where they can and can't live. It's actually that there aren't choices for a lot of people.
Well, Skylar Olson up there in Seattle, you're hearing Kevin saying it's not that bad. And if you have to, move somewhere that is more affordable, then so be it. You're hearing Holly saying it is bad. So I'm going to put you on the spot. Which one's right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm far more likely to come down on the side of Holly. You know, I mean, you can't discount the cost of transportation. You know, you can say housing, if you live way out there, is more affordable, but that transportation cost is also becomes a huge chunk of your income, right? So when it nets across space, we find that, lower income families and households, they actually are more rent burdened than higher income households.
So right? But let me ask you, at least when it comes to rentals, and in the next half hour, we're going to get into buying homes. But for rentals in L.A., where is this headed?
Yeah, I mean, what we're seeing predicting is that rents are going to have to continue apace, right? You're going to see in the next couple of years that rents are just going to keep on rising. Now, construction has started to respond and that'll ease off pressure, but that takes some time. And it's also very hard to add sufficient number of units through construction. So there's still going to be a lot of pressure in this space. I mean, it's probably going to get worse.
And as we talk about rents in Los Angeles, I should point out we're not just confining ourselves to the city of Los Angeles. There are other surrounding communities, and it's basically circles getting wider and wider and wider as people go. So do rents, I guess, Kevin, this goes to you, do rents drop the farther away you get from downtown Los Angeles, or do you find that rents are pretty much consistent through those ever-widening circles?
No, the farther east you go, the more they they drop. I mean, the West Side's the most expensive for obvious reasons, and then, and you know, then as you go farther east and in downtown and then beyond, yeah, there's pockets everywhere that are affordable. There's pockets everywhere that are not. LA's a great place to live. There's a lot of great things about living here. Yet, guess what? You have to pay for it. It's part of the deal.
Holly, where are the places that are affordable?
Well, I live in Pasadena, which is east, and it's not affordable. I'll tell you that right now. And I will say that, yeah, if you want to live here, you have to be able to afford to. But we also need an economy that's based on lower wage jobs. You know, if you want preschool teachers, we either got to pay them more or we got to have places for them to afford, or both.
But to be affordable, how much farther east do you have to go? Like Denver? I mean, how
Denver's
far?
Pretty
Denver's pretty expensive, too.
And in fact, before we break, I wanted to ask Skylar, what are the rents like in Seattle as compared to Los Angeles? Because Seattle, I would imagine, has its own difficulties, right?
Yeah, I mean, Seattle is also, you know, rents are growing pretty fast. We're not quite as expensive as Los Angeles, certainly in terms of affordability. Our income growth has been a little stronger down in the Los Angeles area. But, you know, if you're talking other places across, you know, other major metros, you know, that are adding huge job growth. I mean, if you talk San Francisco, they're up 15% year over year. So this is not a problem specific to Los Angeles.
Okay,
this is
so
all sorts of places.
It's not a matter of like, I can't stand it in L.A., I'm going to move to San Francisco or I'm going to move to Seattle. You'll be facing the same thing there, plus moving costs, it sounds
like. Job growth, you know, to Kevin's point, this is, you know, this is a problem because L.A. is such a nice place to live, right? Job growth tends to make things less affordable. It's like a two-edged sword.
I'm getting depressed. Do you want to be my roommate?
No, absolutely not. I will pay whatever it takes to avoid that. I guarantee that.
Okay.
Listen, we're going to talk a little bit more about what it takes to buy a house as our conversation continues. This is KNX 1070 Spotlight. I'm Tom Huell, and we're taking your calls at 866-569-1070. American Dream, L.A. Nightmare.
And I'm Charles Feldman. We're taking your tweets at hashtag KNX Spotlight.
You know, it's funny, as I was reading off that list of temperatures and I'm naming different communities, I'm thinking to myself, okay, how much does it cost to live there? And how much does it cost to live there? And how much would that cost? We're joined now by Beth Stein, Regional Vice President, Coldwell Banker, Residential Brokerage, who's joining our panel. We're going to talk a little bit now about buying homes. And I remember, this is one of those back in my day stories, but when I bought my first house here in Southern California, it cost $111,000, which was, you know, way, way out there in order to buy a house. And the interest rate was 13.5%. So that jacked the price up.
That would have been in probably 1978?
83.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, you know, I was much farther out than you're probably thinking about. But nonetheless, I mean, I wanted to get a house, and I was willing to pay 13.5%.
Right.
That was considered a good deal at the time. Today, we're looking at, 3.5 to 4%?
3.5 to 4 in some cases, in some areas, in some spots for some purchases, 4.25. But yeah, they're trying to keep them as low as they can. And, you know, interest rates are going to start to tick up a little bit. They have to.
Yeah, but it's going to be a while before they hit 13.5.
Yeah, no, so, I don't see that happening.
So, you know, during the the Great Recession, we know that credit tightened up, froze, actually, and nobody was making any loans. Now money is flowing, but not quite as freely as it was back then. What does it take to buy a house these days?
You have to have stellar credit, for one. And you have to have the ability to prove that you can pay, make your payments. They want to see good reserves in the bank after you close. And it used to be in the old days when I bought a house, which was I bought my house in... not too far off. I was in 84, I think. No, I was in 85, I bought our house. Mm-hmm. You know, they wanted to see you made half of what you were borrowing in a year. And then just before the go-go days, just before we hit this recession, if you had a heartbeat or a pulse, they would lend you money. So you could get $1 million, $2 million house, $3 million house for 10% down. How people were able to pull that off with no credit, you know, with no income verification. You have to have strong income. It now is back to the old rules. They want to see that you're making 40% to 50% of what you're borrowing in a year. And that's including your principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. So they want to know all cost in. And they want to see that you've got a nice pad in the bank, a year to 2 years in reserves. They want to know that you can pay
now,
that note.
Now, when you say a nice pad in the bank, that doesn't necessarily mean a savings account of $120,000. It means a retirement account. It means something saved up somewhere, right?
It means something saved up somewhere that's equivalent to at least 1 year to 2 years worth of payments.
But let's talk briefly about money, what this means in actual dollars. So what are we talking about? How much money are we talking about?
Well, I think if you're buying, if you're getting a $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 loan, let's go with $1 million.
Okay.
Okay. If you're getting $1 million loan,
just go with a million.
I work in Beverly Hills. What can I say?
What the heck?
But if you're buying, you know, if you're getting $1 million loan, they're going to want to see that you've got $200,000 in the bank to be able to make payments.
$200,000 in the bank.
In the bank.
In
readily accessible, not something that could go away tomorrow.
Okay, so fluid, liquid money.
Yeah, liquid sort of money.
Okay,
yeah.
Let's check in with Eric now in Marina Del Rey. He's got an interesting question. And Beth, I think it's probably going to be directed at you. So let's listen in as Eric joins us. Eric?
Hi, thank you so much for having this segment. My wife and I are right in the middle of actually looking for a place to live. We're originally from the San Gabriel Valley. My wife is a school teacher. She got a job in Santa Monica. We had to up and move. We moved to Marina Del Rey in a rental knowing we're paying way too much for a one-bedroom, but now we're looking for places to live. And it's really challenging for us because we're living outside, even in the San Fernando Valley, which is going to make an hour commute for my wife, and it's still in the $500,000-$600,000 range for us to look for a place. So my question is, I keep hearing these radios, I keep hearing in the news, about jobs leaving Los Angeles, is there ever going to be a scenario where my wife and I will be able, who make decent amount of money, will be able to actually afford something comfortably if ever, I hear everything going up, is there ever going to be a scenario where it will actually go down and become more affordable for everybody?
Well, didn't that just happen?
Yeah.
Didn't the housing market just crash? And then, of course, when all the prices went down, all the loans froze up.
That's true, but I will tell you, Eric, it's a true economic cycle in real estate. What goes up, goes down, goes up, goes down again. And yes, there is a time you'll be able to afford, and you can probably afford something now. I would, you know, are you looking south and going into Torrance and going into East Torrance and maybe heading a little bit further south? You know, you're going north and you're going into the valley, and let me tell you, you know, I am my region. I work from Santa Barbara to the San Gabriel Valley all the way down to the South Bay, and I've got 34 offices, and I'm driving all over the place.
Very quickly, Skylar Olson still on the line with us. And Skylar, will things ever stabilize or even get more reasonable?
You know, we're seeing the home value appreciation in Los Angeles start to temper significantly, right? Only a couple quarters ago, home values were growing in the double digits as we came out of, you know, that low crash. So things are getting more moderate. It's getting, you know, buyers are a little bit more in the driver's seat every month, but it's still a serious seller's market in Los Angeles.
Well, Skylar, let me ask you a question, and then I'm going to throw that same question toward Beth. How much of this increase in cost for housing, houses in particular, is driven by investors, people buying to flip the houses, people buying to rent the houses to other people?
Yeah, one of the constraints on the inventory for sale that happened through the course of the recovery is, you know, you had all these homes that were either foreclosed or just, you know, much cheaper than they used to be. And that was a great opportunity for people to come in, buy up the housing stock and convert it to rentals. And that's actually a huge growth in the rental market, has been in SFRs because of that investor activity.
So basically, it's not going to get really comfortable anytime soon. And the only way to really get into the market is to find favorable terms, perhaps maybe go the FHA route if you can do that. We'll talk a little bit more about that, but that gives you a little bit of a break on the down payment. You still have to show excellent credit. You have to show income and you have to show the ability to maintain the loan. We'll talk a little bit more about that as our conversation continues. This is KNX 1070 Spotlight, American Dream, LA Nightmare. I'm Tom Huell, and we're taking your calls at 866-569-1070.
And I'm Charles Feldman. We're taking your tweets at hashtag KNX Spotlight. You can also watch us now on Periscope. Just look for KNX Spotlight Housing. Can you afford to live in L.A.? And apparently the answer, Tom, is no.
Not anymore, that's for sure. So. Holly Benson, Vice President of Housing Development for Abode Communities. You have probably one of the most depressing jobs I can think of. People come to you looking for a place to live, and you have to, I guess, turn so many away or just say, you know what, wait, we don't have anything for you yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's job security for sure, but, you know, hard to sleep at night. You know, anecdotally, we're a development company. We do new construction, build new developments all the time, affordable housing. And, you know, an average development anywhere in greater L.A., 70 units or so, the demand when we open those buildings up, at, you know, maybe we do a 2-week opening period for applications. It's minimum 7-to-1 application, typically 7 applications for every 1 unit. So,
and what is affordable housing? When you say I'm opening up a 70 unit affordable housing building, what are those rents?
Yeah, they're serving people who earn somewhere in the 30-60% of area median income. We specialize in family housing, so we're talking about serving households that earn anywhere from, say, for a family of 4, $25,000 to maybe $50,000 a year.
So that would be below the numbers that we've been talking
Absolutely.
About. You need $69,000 to afford an apartment on your own. Beth, we alluded to this. There are ways to get loans still,
sure.
despite the tighter circumstances. One of them is FHA. Now, there mm-hmm. are some restrictions that go along with that, but is this a way that somebody who makes a fairly good living might be able to find their way into a house?
I think that's absolutely a way. I mean, there's all sorts of conventional financing out there, and there are a lot of lenders out there who want to work with buyers. I mean, the whole point is everybody wants the American dream, right? But the people, we have a situation where our average homeowner right now, the people who actually, the group of people who own the most homes in the Los Angeles area, actually in all of California, really, are that 65 and older group. I'm not there yet, but you know that's who is at, who are the averages. Where we're having trouble is the millennials, right? And that's where the gap is.
So you got to get some sort of economic crowbar right. to pry them out of their homes,
exactly.
and get them to sell at, I guess, a level that millennials can afford.
Exactly. And when you actually look, we talked about inventory before, and the reason we have such a pricing before, and there's a reason the prices have been driven up so much is because there's a lack of inventory. And that's for a lot of different reasons. But I believe in my heart of hearts that I've been doing this for 35 years. I was 5 when I got licensed. I've been doing this for long enough to know that, yes, it's, you know, we actually haven't completely recovered from the last recession yet. There's still homes that are underwater. I believe that once we hit that recovery, once the inventory starts to loosen up, and I do believe it will, I think we're going to see a lot of things happen.
All right. So let's say, Beth, I'm a millennial.
Okay.
I'm not, but I wish.
Stretch the bounds of your imagination.
You still have hair and it's dark.
Thank you. But let's say I was a millennial, and I don't have a rich mom and dad, but I want to live here.
Mm-hmm.
So give me some advice. What do I do?
You want to live here. You don't have a rich mom and dad. Well, in our area, most millennials are either a third of them are still living at home,
right.
and 41% of them are renting. So it's all about accumulating wealth and trying to live within your means. And I'd heard that talked about earlier, which is a problem that most people have. You got to live within your means and start to save. But yes, there are all sorts of things. And by the way, there are still situations where, you know, you have a lot of sellers who might be willing to do seller financing. So there's an option there, too.
Got Angie on the line from Arcadia, who joins us. And she has another aspect of the whole housing issue that she wants to bring up. Angie, we're a little bit short on time, so let's hear what you have to say.
Well, I was just going to say that young couples, like families just starting out, to buy a home, it's difficult because of flippers. They'll buy a property that was affordable, they'll do a little repair on it, and then put it back on the market for much more than anyone can really afford if you're just starting out. So a young family just starting out, if you can afford a house that went to $100,000, a flipper will grab it, and it'll be $200,000 or $300,000, and then you can't afford it.
So how does that
distort the market?
Yeah, how does that distort the market?
You know, and it's something we have to deal with. Developers are in the market, and until they step out. But I will tell you, you'd be surprised how having the right realtor representing you can make a huge difference. Because sometimes it's not just about the price. For a seller, sometimes they want to know that there's somebody who's emotionally attached. So the right realtor is going to take you there, is going to present the right offer, your offer in the right way, and write a great letter or have you write a letter with a photograph. Sometimes it is emotional heartstrings that actually can make a deal happen.
Well, here's a tweet we have. Someone is asking, how can a home buyer get an agent to fight for them when all the agents care about is their own self-interest to sell it for the highest price? That sounds like a fair question to me.
Well, yeah, the agents is getting commission from the seller. Okay, both agents, the buyer's agent and the seller's agent. They're both getting paid by the seller.
Well, as things go, yes, the listing agent signs their listing for a certain percentage, usually hopefully 6%, and they're offering 50% of that to the cooperating agent. Yes. But at the end of the day, if you have your own agent representing you, they are going to fight for you because their fiduciary responsibility is for you, their client, their buyer. If you have an agent and you're representing the seller, your fiduciary is for the seller. So obviously, an associate who's representing a buyer wants to get the best, you know, the best property for the best price for their client, as does the seller's agent. So yes, you have people that are at odds, but at the end of the day, everybody wants to make a deal happen. Sellers want to sell, buyers want to buy.
It's also kind of known that when you buy a house, you're probably going to move within 5 to 7 years. And if you're happy with the way your agent handled it, you're going to go back to that agent.
That's exactly right.
They want the repeat business, too.
If they're smart enough to stay in touch, yes.
All right. Our conversation continues in just a moment. This is KNX 1070 Spotlight, American Dream, L.A. Nightmare. I'm Tom Huell.
And I'm Charles Feldman. Guys, why do I think this is somewhat insane, this whole thing? I mean, L.A. has had boom years before. It's had bust years before. But this escalation in prices, from everything from rentals to buying homes, which is what we've been talking about this entire hour, just seems insane.
We dropped so much that we had a whole lot to go back up. You know, we went up 23% in 2013. Then 2014 was a slower increase in price. But you got to remember, we had a long way to climb. So I think that's a big part of it.
And at the same time, our incomes just haven't kept a pace. And, you know, it's interesting, especially again with the lower income working households, to think about proposals such as the Mayor Garcetti's $15 an hour minimum wage. You know, these are the small steps we could be taking to start addressing the problem in a real way that really hits people in the pocket.
It's a very small step, though. $15 an hour isn't going to get you close to the $69,000 you need to rent an apartment.
I totally agree. It's better than what they're making now.
Exactly. Charles?
All right. So we want to thank everybody. But before we do, a quick program note. On May the 11th, Tom and I will be back here with our monthly Ask the Mayor program. You can ask L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti anything you want to ask him, including about housing and rental, I suppose. And on May 21st, we have another KNX Spotlight, Life in the Split Lane. What is that about? It's about lane splitting by motorcycles. Do you ride a motorcycle?
No.
Neither
my wife
I.
won't let me.
Good for her. Smart woman.
Yes, absolutely. Smart woman. Yeah. We want to thank our guests who've been with us for our special broadcast, KNX Spotlight, American Dream, L.A. Nightmare, Holly Benson, Skylar Olson, Beth Stein, and Kevin Miller. Also, thanks to KNX Production Director Bill Nesbitt, Board Operator Logan Moy, Jonathan Service, who's been handling the phones, Reporter Chris Sedens, Producer, and my co-host Charles Feldman, also Producer David Singer, News Director Julie Chin, and of course, thanks to me. I'm Tom Huell. Thanks for listening.